Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You asked me to be present for this episode, which revealed some information about my prior contribution to this series for 12 years.
Oh my God, I'm surprised. Here we go.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School. I'm your co-host, Ready Rich, coming to you live from Show Creative Studios South here in Las Vegas, Nevada. On today's show, it's just me. I'm in this room. I'll be in that room. We'll see if that works out. I hope this isn't too loud on the live stream because there's no way to check. And now here's your host, brought to you by Masterclass, Penn Jillette.
What am I doing, Ready? What am I doing? What am I doing?
I don't know what you're doing.
What do you mean what you're doing? I'm preaching love.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you? We're brought to you by Masterclass. That's what's nothing wrong with that. And we use Masterclass all the time. Everybody does. You know, Kramer started up after we talked to him last week. And you should be using Masterclass, too. We'll talk a lot more about it. But right now, our listeners will get an extra 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/pen. That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/pen. Yeah. You know why? I missed at least three of those. So that's now we're covered. How are you doing now, Ready Rich?
I'm doing okay, but I'm trying to make the leap into the other room
here. You're distracted. You're very distracted.
I'll be tuned in a second here.
Yeah. Okay. You want me to just fill in for a moment? I'll tell you, people that are listening, which is I can't tell the people who aren't really. Ready Rich has been in better spirits lately. It's a very good thing for us. Ready Rich is happier today. He was happier when I saw him at the show. He came to see the Big Penn and Teller show. And he seemed just in better spirits all around. Are you in better spirits all around, Ready Rich?
I am.
Yeah, you seem to be. Matt Donnelly is not here again. It's our fault, maybe mostly mine, but also a little bit of your. Are you going to just keep running back and forth?
Just once.
Okay. Ready Rich is getting up, going in the other room, coming back in. He has a whole agenda here. Our problem with Matt Donnelly is of our own creation. You see, a great magician, a really good magician was on David Cassaro was our fooler the other night. He came on to do a magic trick. He also said, you would like this, he also said he was a little hesitant to do a Chris Angel joke. He wasn't sure that would be okay. But he ended up doing it. He took a stab that I wouldn't punch him if he made a joke about Chris Angel. We were backstage afterwards. He was talking about other magicians. And he said, you know that Matt Donnelly, he is a real working magician. He works all the time.
Yes.
It really made me laugh because I still don't think of Matt Donnelly as a magician. So when other magicians who are really hardworking magicians say, oh, he's a working magician, I go, really? Is he really? And he just, you know, there was no kind of, oh, he used to be an improv guy, but now he's a magician. It was none of that. It was just, oh, he's a guy that works a lot. He's right at the castle. He's in Chicago. He's all over the place. He does work a lot.
We do another podcast together, a side hustle of his.
Yeah.
And it's weekly. And I haven't seen him, but maybe six times this year total.
Really?
Yeah.
What does he do? He does them on the road?
Yeah.
That's Abracababble, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a subscription one because there's secret stuff.
Yeah, Patreon only.
So the other day, I looked on the schedule, okay? I don't often look at the schedule. Once in a while, I look at the schedule because it's supposed to be there for me to see what I'm doing. And I saw a very odd thing. It said, P&T, throw out first pitch. I have no idea what that meant. So I asked Glenn, what am I doing on Friday? He said, you're throwing the first pitch at a baseball game. I said, what? He said, I was going to talk to you about it. That's what Glenn always says when it means he was going to spring something on me and I wasn't supposed to know about it. We're going to talk to you about that. So there was an AFAN night. We know what AFAN is.
I do.
AFAN is AIDS for Nevada, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. But it's a charity we work with for long enough that I should know what their name stands for.
I'll tell you exactly what it is right here.
Okay. I should know that.
Aid for AIDS of Nevada.
How long have I been doing stuff for them? Like 30 years?
Since before I got here.
Yeah.
And I've been here for 18?
Yeah. It's been a long time. We do the AIDS walk. We do all that stuff. And we help raise money for a very, very good charity. Of course, there aren't many bad charities. Buying Bibles from from Trump might be a bad charity, but most charities are good.
Buying monkeys from a Baptist church.
Buying monkeys from a Baptist church. That's true. So it was they had a fan night at a baseball game, which is kind of nice. It's, you know, they're going to raise money for a fan. And the first pitch of the season gets thrown out by a supposed celebrity. And I don't know how much wheeling and dealing went into trying to convince people that we were fucking celebrities, but that's what Glenn does, right? Well, I think it was more Laura's thing, actually. So we were going to throw out the first pitch. Now, Teller thought we should do more than throw out the first pitch. Now, when Teller says things like that, he's always wrong, right?
Okay.
What they're asking for is just do what everybody else has fucking done every time they throw out a pitch. This is not George W. Bush after 9/11. By the way, George W. Bush throwing the first pitch after 9/11, he didn't do a magic trick. He just threw the pitch from the mound, right?
Did he do something else?
No. He just threw the pitch. That's all he did.
And was the pitch for war?
Yeah, he did his pitch for war. No, but it was I didn't know this. Robbie had to tell me all this, but it was a unifying moment, I guess, for baseball fan Americans. Also, Mox was very kind because Mox sent me like a TikTok of the 100 worst first pitches. Boy, there are some bad ones, really bad ones. Like 50 Cent threw into the dugout. He tried to wind up and lost him. A lot of people threw it straight down into the dirt. One person hit the photographer directly in the balls. In the balls. Notice the S at the end of that. Very important when you say balls.
A lot of us go into show business because we're not good at sports.
Yeah, I know. Precisely. But there was a basketball guy, like Michael Jordan or somebody, that just threw it crazy. Like, not on purpose. Like, so there was a little bit of, that's Mox helping out her dad, you know.
Do you have any perspective on the per capita on this video?
Oh, what percentage?
Yeah, do we have like a perspective versus the national anthem?
I don't know. But I believe it's one a season for every baseball team, right? They would have a first pitch. And Robbie informed me.
Oh, I thought it was every game.
No. I mean, there has to be a first pitch.
But not a celebrity first
pitch. Not a celebrity first pitch. I believe it's one a season. Not every game. Who the fuck wants to see a celebrity every game? Aren't they there to see baseball?
Now, you asked me to be present.
Okay.
And the chat's over here. And I'm certain there's already an answer. I can't look at it.
Look at it.
Every game.
Every game?
Yeah.
Every game there's a celebrity first pitch?
I don't know that we could trust.
Because this was the season. It was a big deal. Okay.
Okay.
You know, Laura, the long-suffering Laura and the long-suffering Glenn do tremendous, tremendous work. It is incredible how difficult it is to corral the two of us to do anything. And they get us doing everything. Because there are two kinds, well, there are many more. Two of the kinds of bad bosses there are.
This is one of my favorite styles of joke.
Are Teller and I. Teller is a micromanager. He will tell people how to answer the phone, exactly the wording. He will tell people how to do every single thing. He thinks he's an efficiency manager, and he can find a better way to do everything. And the fact is, he can't even find a better way to fucking eat his lunch. He can't do anything, but he thinks he can, okay? Bad boss. I'm the other kind of bad boss, because I won't tell anybody anything, and when they do something wrong, I pout. And give no feedback whatsoever. So I can pout for months over somebody doing something wrong when I could just say to them, oh, could you just, and it would be no problem at all. Those are the two bad kind of bosses you have. Imagine having those together.
I don't have to imagine that.
It's terrible. It's awful. So Teller didn't say to me, because Teller knew I would tell him to fuck off. But Teller said to Glenn and Laura, who in a way are paid to listen to his bullshit, also paid to listen to my bullshit, by the way. He told them, I don't want to just stand beside Penn while he pitches. By the way, the idea of Teller pitching was never brought up by anybody. He said, I don't want to just stand there. I want to do something. So I get a magic trick I'm going to do. I'm going to turn a golf ball into a baseball. So I'll hold up a golf ball, and Penn will say, well, that's not the right ball, Teller. And then we'll change it into a baseball. And Glenn informed him very politely, there's no microphones out on the field. People are really far away. And even though he said, well, isn't there a TV camera? And Glenn said, yes, but it's very far away, and they're doing a very wide shot. No one will see your stupid little magic trick. Although those weren't the words that Glenn used, right? Glenn didn't say your stupid little magic trick. He probably said something very politic like, oh, I'm not sure that'll read as well as you think it might to the back of the stadium.
He'll have saved those words for the call to me on the edit for the show. After the fact.
Off the record, right? Off the record. I'm not sure that that's what Glenn was thinking. I'm just guessing that's what Glenn was thinking. That's what I'd be thinking. Teller never got the balls to talk to me about the balls, or the balls to talk to me about the balls. You hear the difference?
Yeah, I steered you away from that. Do you want to explain it?
Balls?
Yeah.
Balls. That's the way it's said for testicles. Balls. You have to do the final S like that. She kicked me right in the balls. Don't bust my balls, right?
Is this a Massachusetts thing?
I don't think so. I think this is international. I believe if you go to Wuchao in China and ask, you point to your balls and say, what are these? They'll say, balls. Balls. This is how great it is. Sometimes, maybe all the time, it's fabulous to be a so-called celebrity. Okay, it's a pain in the ass. You got to show up at the baseball game you don't want to go to. You have to show up at a hockey game you don't want to go to. You have to show up at the mayor's office you don't want to go to. Okay, that's a little bit of a pain in the ass, okay?
People are on your dick in the monkey room.
Yeah, all that stuff. But there's some good parts of it. I had to drive over to the stadium, the Aviator Stadium or something is what it's called.
No idea.
Yeah. Our baseball team, ours, Las Vegas's, is called the Aviators. They used to be called the Area 51s, which is a much better name. You know Katz of Medicine?
Mm-hmm. Johnny Katz.
He had to explain this to me. He used to be a sports writer. He explained to me how they had to change the name because of da-da-da-da. They were playing against the Reno Aces, which, by the way, is a better name than the Aviators. So there's a big crowd of people there, right? And Laura sent me a wonderful map that told me exactly where I was going to drive and where I was going to park. And I, of course, texted back to Laura, I'm not going to look at this map. So she sent me her location so I could drive right to it. I'm in the middle of a road. This is a road, people going into parking, coming out of parking, right? I said, where do I park? She said, turn your car around and put it right here. I said, you mean stop in the middle of the road and just leave my car there? She said, yes. I never felt happier. It was really great. She said, no one's coming out right now, and there's police to watch it. They'll just guide people around it. I said, I just leave my car right here. It's really, it felt like you're driving down Flamingo, and all of a sudden you say, I'd like to stop my car now. You stop it and just get out, leaving it right there. It was fabulous.
Helicoptering into the show, better or worse?
Well, I always helicoptering in is better. You know, that's still my plan, to helicopter into the Renaissance Festival for the 50th anniversary. I'm still pushing for that, and Glenn has not said no. Of course, Glenn never says no. Glenn just makes sure it doesn't happen. You know that.
Yeah.
So I just turned the car around, put it down, and they come over. They give me an A-fan hat to put on. Then I go. They say, let's take you into an office. You'd be comfortable. I sit on a couch, right? They give me a jersey that says Penn on the back and 93, which was when we moved to Vegas or something. That's how they picked the number. I don't know. And it's orange, bright orange, really good. I have my A-Fan hat on, and I have my my jersey on. I sit there. Teller arrives much later because there were mistakes with the cars and all that stuff. See, if a mistake is going to be made, if something bad is going to happen to Penn and Teller, it always happens to Teller. It's as simple as that. So he's more for toots than I am. And general statement.
Sparejet 1.
Sparejet 1, right?
Exception to the rule.
Yeah. Bad things happen to me, yeah. But I think I don't care when bad things happen to me that much. So Teller comes in and goes, I've brought a golf ball. And all we've got to do is I'm going to do this move. We go. I said, no, we're not going to do that. He said, I thought you'd say that. I said, I did say that. That was the end of that conversation. And there was a very, 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 very perky woman who was in charge of us. She was very perky. And she had a lot of personality. A lot of personality. All of a sudden, we were on a situation comedy. You know, she was that kind of person. She was the wacky next door neighbor who, it was like Lucy was taking the celebrities to do the first pitch. And they said, you're going to throw this ball. She said, you can't touch it till you get out there. I said, I can't touch the ball. I did not say you can touch my balls. I did not say that because that would have been a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. She had it wrapped. Like it was a expensive orange from Florida. It was wrapped. The ball was wrapped like that.
Like the fruit-flavored chocolate ball for the holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I said, do I get to warm up? Now, Goudeau, remember Goudeau?
I do.
He wrote to me and said,
yeah, lots of mail for him still.
You're throwing out the first pitch, Goudeau, he said to me. I'm not Goudeau, I'm Penn. And he said, make sure you warm up. Throw it many times. This is the long throw. Loosen up your arm. You want to do some stretches. I wrote back and said, who the fuck do you think you're writing it to? I'm going to do absolutely nothing. Okay? So, perky woman led us down to the field. So now we're on the field. And Teller says, what a beautiful place this is. That was Teller's comment. And then we see Johnny Katz, right? And he has a baseball, and he says, we can throw this back and forth. So we're throwing it back and forth, and I go, ooh, this is no problem. And I say, that seems like pretty much the distance from the mound to the home plate. And Teller says, I think it's about half. I said, really? It's that far? Then I turned around. It was big. It's a long distance from the home. It's 60 feet and 6 inches. Did you know that?
It's like getting out of the highway and looking around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long way. We're not on the plate yet. We're just there. They give me a few baseballs, not the one that I'm going to use, but and I juggle them a little bit, and I'm fucking around. I got nothing to do. And I'm throwing the ball back and forth with Johnny Katz. Then we have to pose with all the mascots. Now, you know, I have a complicated relationship with mascots. I just do. I really respect the people that are in the mascot suit, and my heart goes out to them. And I consider them to have the same job I have, which they're doing the exact same thing. And they're also doing it with a heavy suit. And
backflip.
And backflip. They're doing all that shit. You know, it's like Ginger Rogers, right? She did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards and in heels. Uh-huh. This guy's doing everything I'm doing, but with a giant duck head. Or I guess it's a goose head, right? Because he's the spruce goose. Or he's spruce the goose.
Oh, I've just now made the aviators.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's also an aviator who looks like a spaceman. They have two mascots here. And there's two guys in suits, you know.
We could probably come up with some worse names than the aviators.
When I was in junior high, I played Little League Baseball. And our team was A&W, was sponsored by the Root Beer Company. Mm-hmm. And they called us Asswipes.
Nice.
Yeah, so we could be the Las Vegas Asswipes, I suppose. That would give you the A. I don't know why they wanted an A, but I guess they did.
The Las Vegas bodies in a bucket at the bottom of Lake Meads?
Yeah. The bucket bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were playing, incidentally, against the Reno Aces. And Johnny Katz said, we hate them. Out of the blue.
Why do we hate them? Just because?
Because they're the opposing team.
Okay.
They were the opposing team. They were lined up to play against us.
But we hate them more than any other opposing team is the...
That's the way I interpreted that was, it. I have no idea what Johnny was really saying. Because Johnny was a sports writer. So Johnny can talk about sports. And I said, the perky woman said, I didn't ask her, but she answered.
I'm sorry, but I need to know more about this.
What?
Is Johnny just ginning up the event for your benefit? Or is this a real thing that we hate Reno?
I would imagine that our major, you've been to Greenfield, Massachusetts.
I have.
Right. Every year, Greenfield, Massachusetts plays a lot of, the Greenfield High School plays a lot of football games, right? But they play against Turner's Falls, which is right across a bridge from probably the Green River. I don't even know what river it is. Anyway, right across the bridge. Used to be a paper mill town. And every year, that's the Turkey Day game. They play against Turner's Falls. And there's a great rivalry. This year, Turner's Falls. Get it? It's a... Yeah. Falls is used two ways there. I think Greenfield always beats them. But now someone from Turner's Falls would be pissed off and say, no, not in 1979. I think Reno is probably the closest baseball team they play, right?
But nobody's tipping over cars after the game, right?
I don't even think he was watching the game.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a fuck about Reno. That's what I want to make sure I still understand.
I think.
Please continue.
No one gives a fuck about Reno, yeah. Actually, that's their slogan. But they have a better name for their team. Aces is better than Aviators.
Yeah.
So.
Didn't want Jokers, I guess.
Yeah, that would be good. The perky woman, the sitcom woman, says to me, I didn't ask her, says to me, don't worry, the bar's pretty low. She said, people sometimes just throw it into the dirt. Sometimes it goes like 2 feet. Sometimes they throw it in a random direction. She said, people are awful at it. You'll do fine. I said, okay. And Kat said, you played Little League? I said, yes, I did. He said, he's going to like interview me about me playing Little League. He's like, fuck you, Cats. No. There's going to be no interview about me playing Little League because all I was a very, very, very bad player. But I think I can make this throw. So we posed with our siblings, the costume characters. We posed with them. Then we posed with a guy who was in a baseball uniform but was a little older and was the big cheese of the game. Mm-hmm. We posed with him. And we posed with some guy who used to be Mike Hammer's partner.
It's everything I can do to not godot the story in this moment.
So I walk out to the pitcher's mound. And for a moment, I try to imagine that I'm at Shea Stadium and I'm the Beatles. That doesn't work. I'm just in a, Las Vegas baseball stadium. But it's a big stadium. You know, I mean, bigger than my Little League stadium,
Do you have a general sense people are looking in your direction at this point?
They seem to be. Then there was a national anthem. And I, of course, took a knee. Because what else am I? No, I didn't do that. I stood there, did everything right. Took my A-fan hat off. Well, the woman sang the national anthem. And she was remarkably good. I know that there's famous stories of people singing the national anthem bad. But they did this weird, weird fucking thing. Really weird. She's singing the national anthem, and during that time, and they were very proud of this, they had a flyover of two jets that came over and went, did little circles and stuff. So it's, and the Rockets. Flag was still there. And I was thinking, well, if they timed it really right, they would go right on that note that no one can hit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pretty close. Then I thought about her singing that, and it just seemed like, do they do that for everybody?
I've seen behind-the-scenes video on this. They have a spotter mm-hmm. to get the timing where they want it. They're like down to the second, wherever they want it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
How do they do it?
There's a guy on a building a couple miles out. And he's on a radio, and he's got a camera for both locations,
mm-hmm.
and he cues them to ramp up their speed at a specific spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was timed right during the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
Rockets red glare, I suppose. Bombs bursting in air.
I mean, when you have a Air Force base on tap a mile away, you're going to fucking use it.
Yeah, yeah. So they and people went crazy over that. They liked it. And then as though jets weren't enough, Penn and Teller walked out to the mound. And the audience cheered. They cheered because Teller didn't have a golf ball and there wasn't going to be a magic trick. They were very excited about that. Oh, good. Ben talked him out of it. That's what the whole audience said together. And I stood there with the ball. Now,
I asked because a lot of times the stuff for TV isn't the stuff for the live venue. And I've never been to a game, so I don't know. But sometimes they'll produce, like if I were not, I'm not a sports guy, so I don't know. But if I were producing the show for television, I'd get all the celebrity stuff out of the way and then just paste in the reaction of the crowd from somewhere else in the show. So I didn't have to coordinate both things, right?
But the reaction of the crowd, what the fuck are you saying? The reaction of the crowd seemed sincere. They seemed happy to see Penn and Teller there.
Right, but I didn't know until this moment that that's not built out that way.
Oh, I see.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, people were still arriving. I mean, there were some people that were driving up going, don't worry, we're just going to miss Penn and Teller. Who cares? We'll see the baseball game.
So for them, it's the opener for the comedy act.
Yeah. No, it's the previews for the movie. We'll get our popcorn during this, right?
Okay.
So we walked out on the mound, and I stood there on the mound. And they told me I could throw from anywhere. The perky woman said, you can throw from in front of the mound or anywhere. But I thought that seemed to be a little bit demoralizing to throw from in front of the mound. So I stood right where the pitcher would stand, you know, and looked out of the crowd and took the ball. And the catcher in this case was a goose. It was a goose. The Spruce, the goose, had the catcher's mitt. And he was doing shtick a lot. Oh, I'm going to catch the ball. You know, that kind of, as much as you can do.
The mascot.
The mascot.
Okay. I was in a different headspace there. Sorry.
Spruce the Goose had the catcher's mitt. He's doing a lot of personality stuff. As a matter of fact, I think anybody watching, their eye would be drawn to Spruce and not to Penn and Teller. But I stood on the mound. I had essentially, I mean, obviously, it's a continuum. But I had a few choices, right? One was, I could really, really wind up, throw as hard as I could, and have a very good chance of throwing correctly and the right distance. Also, have a non-zero chance of throwing it into the dirt, throwing it high in the air, hitting a photographer in the balls, or throwing it into the dugout, like 50 Cent did. Katz has said to me, I don't think you're going to do worse than 50 Cent. 50 Cent's the worst I've ever seen.
He works out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that supposed to mean?
He's like,
are you saying I'm not an athletic fella?
He's a buff guy.
Right. But he threw into the dugout, which is a big mistake. See, I have really good hand-eye, right? My accuracy is going to be very, very good. Okay. And I'm tall.
Were you fighting me on bodybuilder build? Or
yes, I was. Offended because I pointed out. Okay. Now I see that was unwise. That was a battle I was going to lose, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was unwise, but that's what I was doing. So I didn't wind up. My other choice was throw casually, have less power.
And look like you meant it.
Was that?
Look like you meant to throw casually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't lift my foot off the ground. I didn't lean all the way back. I just kind of threw it like you were throwing a snowball at someone's ass. That's the way I threw it, right? Like with a certain kind of...
Is this an analogy we both know?
No, I don't think so. I think it's an analogy neither of us know. But you know, you snowball, like I'm over in London and it snows and I make a snowball and I try to hit my manager in the head. Then I decide I probably shouldn't do that. So I throw and hit him in the ass, right?
I see where this is coming from now. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, Pete. I wanted to hit Pete right in the face with a snowball, but instead I hit him in the ass, right? And he said, what? So that was the kind of throw I did, okay? And I got to tell you, it bounced 2 feet in front of the plate, which means it did not have the velocity in order to make it all the way across the plate. And it bounced in front of the plate, and then Spruce was unable to catch it because it bounced up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was totally successful. I think a casual throw in the exact right direction that's a little bit short of the mark, it is respectful because it shows that the pitchers have a really hard job. If I'd have thrown it right into the strike zone really, really fast, 95-mile-an-hour fastball, it would have shown a certain disrespect to the pitcher who's going to follow, right? Right? Right?
I want to understand the psychology entirely.
Okay.
Between the two choices,
mm-hmm.
were you concerned if you'd taken the first choice
mm-hmm.
to throw seriously?
Mm-hmm.
That you would be perceived as delusional if you failed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I will lie and say right.
You don't think that's right?
No, you asked me a moment ago to agree with you, and I'm now agreeing with you, and we'll edit out that part.
No, leave that part in. That part's good, because that part explains what I meant. And then it was really nice, because I walked out, and we walked through, and a few people took pictures, and we walked out, and I got in my car. It was parked in the middle of the street. Did I mention that?
Yes.
Got in and drove to the show.
I'll put a nail in that. I think it's entirely fair to not want to be the guy who says, I took karate for 10 years in elementary school,
mm-hmm.
and I think I could beat Mike Tyson.
That's happened, didn't it?
You don't want to be that guy.
Didn't the guy just do that?
I don't
know. There's a YouTube.
Oh, yeah, that, like a plane or something.
No, there's a YouTube guy who is going to fight Mike Tyson.
I don't know the story.
He's coming out of retirement to fight a guy who's a YouTuber.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a no-win, as Mox points out to me. It's a no-win situation for the YouTube guy. If he wins, he's beat up an old guy who doesn't box anymore. And if he loses, he's been beat up by an old guy who doesn't box anymore, right?
Also, if he wins, he's opened the door for everybody in the world to want to now beat him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he can't go anywhere in public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he absolutely can't win. You know, I saw an interview with the guy who plays Mike on Breaking Bad. He also plays it on Better Call Saul. You know the guy I mean?
I haven't seen either show.
Okay. There's a guy who plays Mike who's a super, super tough guy. And he's older than me, but he plays super, super tough.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, and obviously this is going to happen, that when he goes into a bar sometimes, people come over and go, you don't look that tough. I could take you out. And he says, I'm an actor. Of course you could take me out. I'm not tough at all. I act tough on TV. I mean, so yeah, that's a stupid thing to do, beat up Mike Tyson. We had Mike Tyson, you know, because Ratso lived at my house when he wrote the Mike Tyson book,
uh-huh.
We were hanging out a lot with Tyson. As a matter of fact, Jonesy came into the green room one night and Mike Tyson was sleeping on the couch. And Jonesy said, I have a weird job. I tell you, I spent some time with Mike Tyson. I would not hit anybody, but on the list of the nobodies I would hit, he'd be at the bottom of it. I believe he could kill anybody. He did not seem like an old guy who was retired. He seemed like a truck.
And without trying hard.
I think without trying hard, yeah. I can't imagine anybody. Which reminds me of a situation that happened. Mike Tyson went out for a pizza, you know, here in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what, maybe Evil Pie or something. He didn't finish the whole pizza because he'd gotten a large pizza. And the server came over and said, box for the pizza. And she took a couple of good punches, but he had the reach on her. Yes, I just told that joke. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Masterclass. Want to talk about Masterclass?
Okay.
Masterclass, this is why we're doing this, because not everybody knows what it is. But Masterclass, members get all these classes by the best teachers in the world. I've forgotten, who teaches magic?
Penn and Teller.
Oh, yeah, it is the best teachers in the world. They're lifelong learning lessons. So if you want to learn about alliteration, lifelong learning lessons would be one of the things you would learn. I always mention the same people. Why don't you mention some different people who are these instructors?
I just recently finished Frank Gehry.
Oh, yeah. Who you said we get along very well, right?
I think so.
I'm going to listen to that one, yeah.
And I've recently started Noam Chomsky.
Oh, you know, I know Noam Chomsky, and I love talking to him. I love talking to him. We did a podcast with Lawrence Krauss. The three of us talked for a long time, and I also went out to lunch with him. Was it as good in the masterclass as it was having lunch with him?
I didn't have lunch with him, so I have not that perspective.
Okay.
But he agrees with me on ChatGPT. So I'm going to listen carefully to everything else he has to say.
Oh, good, 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 good. What's the point he agrees on?
That it doesn't mean much of anything.
Okay. When you talk to Noam Chomsky, or when, more importantly, when you listen to Noam Chomsky, boy, you learn a lot. He just seems to know everything, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have different people interviewing him throughout the masterclass just to get the different pieces of information because it's so disparate. That somebody who knows this thing can't follow him on that thing.
And they did a beautiful job producing it, right? All the master classes are beautifully produced. The people work really hard at understanding the subject, and then they help you teach it. It's really, really good. And there's 11 categories. I'm holding up five fingers for no reason. There's 11 categories and over 180 instructors. And once you have a membership to Masterclass, you have access to every single thing they put out. You don't have to, there's no add-ons. You just get a membership to Masterclass and you get everything. And it's in, I don't know why I have to say, it's in every format. It's available. It's really, really good. You can watch any order, any sort of chunks. You'll learn a lot of stuff. And even if you don't care about architecture, you learn a lot of stuff from Frank Gehry. If you don't care about stand-up comedy, you learn a lot of stuff from Steve Martin. It's a really, really good thing.
He talks about writer's block and how that's really editor's block, not writer's block, and why is a guy that's dealing with construction workers talking about writer's block?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get everything from everybody.
It's really, really good. And right now, our listeners get an additional 50% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/pen. Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/pen. Masterclass.com/pen. Yeah.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, there's other stuff I want to talk about, not just
the first pitch.
So that was it. It was really well run and everything. And as far as I know, there's been no humiliation from my throw, which is good.
Okay. You know, played it right.
Yeah. Well, they had me go back a little later and relieve the pitcher. I threw a few against Reno because we hate them. But it was a fine experience.
I have to unpin a couple things.
Okay.
The foil on the ball, is that a security measure so you're not making a spitball or something?
Not foil. It was tissue paper.
Okay.
Like an orange. Did you ever buy overpriced oranges, like you're down in Florida and you want to get a present for someone and you buy them a box of oranges from Florida, which they send? When I was an adult, which was a while ago, if I went down to Florida, I would send my parents a box of oranges. And the oranges, I don't think were really probably any different than the supermarket oranges, but they came each one in tissue paper. Like, who is that, David and what, that sells that shit for Christmas? The fancy food?
Walensky or something like that?
I don't know. But it's like that, where they just like have pears and they wrap them real nice and stuff. That's where the baseball was.
The Asian ones come in the little foam things.
Yeah. It was like that.
Same deal.
Like the baseball was really important.
So they're just trying not to bruise it. But the question I'm asking is, are they trying to preserve security on the ball so that you're not doing something funky to it before it gets into play?
That's what I kind of thought, but I wasn't really sure. But then as I went up to the mound, I spit on it.
Cool.
So I went, pff. I don't know if anybody saw that, but I thought it was funny. What's the other things you want to ask about this? It's a fascinating story.
At the beginning, when I was doing the tech stuff, about why I was happy, we never talked about that.
Oh, yeah. Why are you happy?
I had a diabetes doctor meeting last weekend, and I weighed less for that than I have for every day I've lived in Las Vegas, save for one.
Very good. Very good. And your diabetes has improved some?
Correct. My A1C is down to a manageable number now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
For the first time in 6 years, probably.
You were really fucked up for a long time.
Yeah. Yes. Did a lot of damage.
It was hard to ignore you. That's what a compassionate friend says. You were suffering. And you look much better now, much happier. And you came to the show.
I did.
Yeah. Brought some other friends.
Brought some broadcaster friends. Also high on the spectrum. Were they a problem?
No. Okay. They seemed to like the show, didn't they?
Yeah.
It seemed to be fine. We had a show last night. I just feel like this is important for reporting purposes. We sucked last night. Now, usually I have a complaint about the show, I usually say it's me not dealing well with an audience member. The audience members were all fine. They needed no dealing with. Other stuff was conspiring against us. It wasn't, well, everything's my fault. The name of the show is Penn and Teller. So if you have trouble parking at the Rio to see our show, it's my fault. If a ticket person on the phone is rude to you, it's my fault. If you don't believe that, look at Yelp. I've never looked at Yelp, but Piff tells me they will say this show sucked. My parking space, it was no good parking space to go see it. They say that in his ratings, and they rate him based on that. I'm sure they do it for us, too. So everything's my fault, everything. And this is specifically my fault. So we have this bit we do, right, where a borrowed credit card vanishes mysteriously and appears inside a hamburger that's inside a trash can that is chained shut. That trash can is inside another trash can that is chained shut. That trash can is inside another trash can that is chained shut. They're all locked up.
It's hamburgers in a box?
Hamburgers in a box, rubber banded up. It's a really good trick. Really, really good trick. Some nights it's a really good trick. Other nights, less so. Actually, every night has been a good trick except for last night when it was not. We had the second trash can. The guy tried to open it, undoes the lock and undoes the chain, and he couldn't do it. So I did my cover line. Oh, this is not supposed to be the hard part of the trick. And then I did a few other jokes, a few other callbacks, and he still did not have the container opened. So Teller, remember the micromanager, leaned over and took over. Now, the guy that was on stage, to my mind, was bigger, stronger, and more competent than Teller. So I thought that Teller was pissing up a rope, right? Teller struggled with it, and I made a couple of jokes, right?
Oh, so there's an actual problem with the lock at this point.
Not with the lock. With the way the chain is wrapped around. Got you it. Can't get the angle to get it, right? So Teller is doing a less good job than the original guy, and also all the heat's on him because his name is also in the show. So I say, hey, anybody backstage got some bolt cutters or something? Right? And then Teller looks at me with this challenge thing, like, oh, I can't do it? Why don't you try? I have no intention of trying. Well, I said, two different kinds of bosses. I have no intention of touching that goddamn lock because I don't see anything that they are doing wrong that's obvious to me. So why would I touch it, right?
Yeah.
Just to show that I'm going to fail too. So then...
setting this up on purpose to make the guy use bolt cutters would be really funny.
Mm-hmm. It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You're welcome. Please continue.
That's a really good idea. That's a really good idea. God damn. I'm not kidding. I think we're going to do that. I just did a Biden impersonation right there. Wow. Anyway, bolt cutters did not come out. Zeke came out. Zeke came out looking punky, sullen, and impatient.
Zeke is almost as funny as bolt cutters.
Zeke came out and just grabbed it and kicked the shit out of it, unlocked it, threw the chains down, and stormed off. Zeke was, I believe, since Zeke is the one that sets those chains, Zeke's exasperation may very well have been exasperation at his own mistake. But it read to the audience like exasperation with us, and that was really funny. He kind of stormed off stage angrily, which is really funny for a crew to kind of go, right. Then we opened it up again. And that is a glitch in the show. That's a glitch in the show. It's a little bit funny. It's funny that the big guy wouldn't touch it. It's funny that whatever Teller's frustrated, it's always funny. And the crew guy coming out, you know, disgusted, doing it, that's okay. We open up the other thing. We open up the hamburger container. He takes off both rubber bands. I say, pull out the hamburger. You pull out the entire hamburger and tell us what's in the hamburger besides cheese. Then he says, my credit card, and the crowd goes wild. Last night he said, nothing, just cheese and a hamburger. I said, huh. Because there's an inevitability as to where that credit card is going to be. So we actually delivered to the audience surprise, because they were surprised the trick had failed, right? Mm-hmm. So Teller and I had to scramble around and find the credit card and then pretend to magically produce it. So that trick ended. And we started the next one, which was a haystack, where a needle is selected and then a card is selected. By the way, very... very good, very test conditions, then lost in the deck. The person climbs up a ladder.
Put your hand on the piano. It's a master class.
Yes.
In audience control.
Yeah.
This trick.
Yeah, that's what we do. And the person from the audience was very good. Very good. And then they throw the whole deck, they make it rain, the whole deck, into the haystack, big haystack way up high in the air. And they throw the needle into the haystack, right? And they come back down and they pull the rope and they dump several bales of hay on top. They're not baled on top of Teller. And he's been holding a thread before that. And on the thread is the needle they chose. They had a choice of 52 and the card that they chose. It is a real miracle. Mm. It is a good, good, good card trick.
And the girl that you caught for the Fool Us version is the most perfect audience member that you could have for that.
Perfect.
So if you haven't seen it, check that out.
Turns out, the trick is less good by a lot, I would say. Much, much, much less good by a lot. If the collected card is not on the needle. If Teller's just holding a thread with a needle on it. And if the way the trick was done, just hypothetically, the way the trick was done, that the guy who was talking it, I guess that would be me, doesn't even know what the card is. I mean, every night, I don't know what the card is. I have no idea. I just take the card, hold it in my hand, say to him, or her, what's the name of your card? they say whatever they say, you know, seven of diamonds. I say, oh, like this, and I turn the card around with a great deal of bravado. I've not even looked at it. I don't even know what the name's going to be. When they say the name, I turn it around. Because the design of the trick is complicated, and we thought there's no reason for Penn to know what the card is. So I don't know. Neither does Teller. So now the guy's got a card in his head that's never been spoken. That card should show up on the needle for it to be a good trick. There's no card on the needle. And furthermore, neither Teller nor I know what the card is. So we can't say, oh, it fell off in the hay, and then pick it up and say, is this your card?
The whole point of the trick is find a needle in a haystack. Mm-hmm. And you've unintentionally created the conditions that you've been lying about creating through the whole show.
Right.
Yeah. You now actually have your card in a haystack.
Yeah. So I said, does that look like a size 4.6 embroidery needle? Guy said, yes, it does.
Ta-da!
I said, ta-da, here's your needle. I don't think anyone in the audience thought that was the best trick they'd ever seen. Some people were kind, and they applauded at the end of it. So that those two are in a row.
I'm picturing Teller like doing his little foot kick a little bit in the hay, hoping for a miracle. Is that happening?
We were both scouring the haystack with our eyes to see if we could see a card that seemed more likely than the others to be the card. Not only was there no card that seemed more likely than the others, there was no card we could even see. Nice. The hay had obscured it. So we were absolutely 100% shit out of luck. So there we were with our little needle dick dangling on a thread, with the audience clearly thinking, huh, it's odd they did that whole card thing. There was certainly a lot of attention to the card for it to not show up again in the show. And of course, they couldn't even think, oh, maybe there's a big punchline coming later, because nobody knew what the card was. The guy went back to his seat. That information is lost when he walked away. Nobody knew what that was. So that was the show. And then we went into the ring on the rose trick, which is a very, very good trick, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what made it really funny was I decided that that trick had to be not a very, very good trick, but the best trick any human being had ever seen. So I gave that an energy and a hype that that trick is never seen and doesn't deserve before. I leaned into that so fucking heavy, thinking, let's have a trick that works now, shall we? It went perfectly. The people in the audience members were perfect. The trick went perfect. I hyped it. The audience was kind of back to where they were 20 minutes before. And then we did LC, which of course always kills. It's a good trick. And finished our show. And I walked off stage despondent. After the show, I usually say one sentence to Teller, like, oh, that was all right. You know, something like that. I didn't say that. I went in and said to Aaron, that was a rough one. And she said, live theater. And I went, yeah, live theater. Yeah, live theater. That's right, Aaron. Live theater. I put my clothes on very quickly. Nate always conscientiously comes in to my dressing room and says, any problems tonight? And I say, no, fine. Every night I say that, no, fine. I was so fast, I was a despondent man moving quickly, that I didn't even see Nate after the show. I saw no one after the show. I grabbed a bottle of Topo Chico. I grabbed a bag of potato chips, which I don't usually have after the show, but I wanted to eat my troubles away. I ate the potato chips, and I drank the Topo Chico, and I got in the car, and I called Glenn, because Glenn had some business stuff to discuss. And when Glenn answered the phone, I said, well, that didn't go well. He said, what? And I then told him this tale of woe. I hope, who were in the audience last night, watched the show and went, well, he doesn't seem that troubled by his tricks not working. But you should know that underneath that facade, I was troubled by the tricks not working.
Usually when you tell me these stories, you immediately go into forensics after the show.
Yeah. I didn't.
For emotional reasons or because you both already knew there were no conversation needed to be had?
We didn't go into forensics because I didn't have the bolt cutter idea until you had it. And the people who would be worried about that and have to solve it are not me.
Okay.
You don't have to say, now, other people don't agree with this. I mean, I don't think David Copperfield agrees with this. And I don't think that a lot of magicians agree with this. But I feel very strongly that when something egregious happens, you don't need to say anything because everybody knows. I mean, am I really going to say to Nate, I think the card should stay on the needle? Am I really going to say that? Isn't that just what a dick would say? Or would a dick just go out despondent without saying anything? Which is the more dick move, you think?
I wasn't perceiving it under that umbrella.
There is forensics that needs to be done, but none that I'm helpful at.
Okay.
And the problem does not need to be pointed out. And that's in both cases. Am I really going to say to Zeke, you know, I think that that chain should open right for the audience member to do it. I'm not going to do that, right? And he also doesn't need my help. You know, maybe if you brought the chain under the handle over here, he's not going to get that from me. He'll get that from Teller on both those things. Mm-hmm. And that's why Teller's great and also annoying. Those two, you know, as I said many times, our pluses are always our minuses. It's always the same. The fact that Teller's a micromanager and is annoying is also the reason our show works. You know, the fact that I go away and pout does no good for anybody. I was trying to find a plus in that, and I wasn't able to by the time the sentence was over.
So as part of the pout, you finish the bag of chips, you're off the call with Glenn. Are you running over other things to soften the blow? Like, at least I'm not Chris Angel?
No, I've been lately, I've stopped watching all movies and television, except when I watch with my son or a family member. I don't watch alone, is what I'm saying. I used to come home from a show and sit and watch a TV show, usually some sort of British murder thing.
Because I've seen you steer into the pout, and all I wanted to do is help you get out of it.
Yeah. I would much rather enjoy the pout. So I sat in my hot tub, which I've been doing every night. I sit in my hot tub with my headphones on. And I actually talked a little more to Glenn because it was a rather complicated business thing. But I sat in the moonlight. Was there moonlight last night? I don't know. I sat in the moonlight, maybe. And I had a nice hot soak. But potato chips, if potato chips don't do it alone, potato chips and peanut butter will. Because you know that's my favorite meal. Mm. A jar of peanut butter open with a spoon and a big bag of Lay's plain potato chips. And just, it's just an amount of fat and salt with a kicker of sugar that will undoubtedly help kill me, but which makes the temporary problems less so.
Can I ask you to quantify the pout? Maybe on the happiness curve scale of 20s to 60s?
You mean how bad it was about?
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Okay.
Not too bad. And also when I got home, I was taken out of my pout really completely by Mox was there just driving in with her boyfriend. And her boyfriend Elijah, who I like very, very much, has a huge afro, like Sly Stone afro and a big mustache. As I drove in, I rolled down the window and I said, "Hey, asshole, get a haircut." Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he made me laugh so hard by turning and going, "Okay." Which killed me. And I went in and Mox and Elijah said, "Why were you laughing hysterically and okay?" Possibly the real answer would be because two tricks just fucked up in the show. But the answer I gave was, I used to have hair longer than you, Elijah. And when I was younger, it was curled out in very close to your style. And people used to yell at me, "Hey, asshole, get a haircut." And I said they would also yell at my friends, "Hey, asshole, get a haircut." Or, "You look like a girl," or one of those things. This was a long time ago. And I said, we always chose to flip the finger or to say, "Fuck off," or "Go kill people, pig," or something like that. Always, almost always involving the middle finger. And I said, it never crossed anyone's mind that I knew to say in a pleasant, sweet voice, "Okay." And I said, it just killed me because I then pictured every single time someone yelled that to me, just looking up with a little grin and going, "Okay," and how that disarms everything. So Elijah had solved a problem that I had and solved it 50 years too late. maybe 51, 52 years too late. But he solved it, which is more than I ever did. And I don't know if anybody else finds that funny, but the idea of going like, "Okay," just killed me. And it was a really big, warm, sweet smile. Now, he obviously, since we were in our driveway, recognized me. So that helped him generate that great comedic thing. But to me, I was picturing the people that drove by me that wanted to kill me saying that and looking back and saying, "Okay," and realized that that was the right answer. After 53 years, I'm trying to think of how old I was when my hair, you know, was out that wide. I guess I was probably 16. So 53 years, I got the right answer, which is just to smile and say, "Okay." Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the right answer to a lot of things, you know, that we just hadn't thought about. You're going to throw a baseball out? Okay. You're going to change a golf ball into baseball? No. That's not the right answer there. But I'll tell you, God damn it, we found the needle in the haystack as promised. We just didn't have the other part of the trick. And I'm going to write an email. As soon as we're done, I'm going to write an email saying we should consider using bolt cutters. I think it makes the trick stronger. I think it's also really funny. And you knew those things because it was your idea. And I'm going to rip that off. No, I'm not going to rip that. I'm going to take it from you.
I won't remember in a couple of weeks, so
you won't.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Okay, anyway, so we've covered. I didn't even get to the things I wanted to get to because the baseball thing took so long. But and also the fucking up the show.
Did you want to outline what you wanted to get into?
I wanted to talk about a conversation I had 30 years ago with a man during our show. Another conversation I had 30 years ago from another man from our show that I wanted to lay out. And you wanted to talk about some rules of mail, right?
Yeah. So questionpen at gmail.com is how you write to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we go over that mail all the time and figure out what we want to talk about from mm-hmm. it on the show.
Yep.
We've already established a couple rules. If you're sending mail to us, if it's more than 3 pages, it automatically goes into a folder that I will never read
mm-hmm.
unless I'm bored, and I'm never bored. So it's called manifestos, by the way.
Uh-huh.
There's no good information coming from more than 3 pages.
Mm-hmm.
If you write about suicide in any way, I won't see that just to keep my own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically goes into a folder. And now I'll have to add, if you write about ChatGPT or AI in the title, I'm not going to see it. So if you want to talk about the subjects, you can, but don't put them in the title because spam mail is leaning heavily to ChatGPT. In AI, and there's just too much of it that I don't have enough time to open it up.
I see. So good. They should know that when they write to Penn Sunday School. questionpen@gmail.com.
Correct.
I remember the name now. That's pretty good. And this was Penn's Sunday School brought to you by, Masterclass. And you can get 50% off right now by going to masterclass.com/pen. That's 15%. That's a lot. It's also a good deal to begin with at masterclass.com/pen. That was Penn Sunday School. Cha cha cha. You become naked. You ready for doing a fine job filling in for Matt Donnelly?
Yep.
He's too successful for our own good. That was Penn Sunday School. That was Penn Sunday School. You know we love you. Hey, Matt Donnelly, you got anybody to thank?
I want to thank Josh Zero. Stop misgendering Moxie on the podcast 2024, but do whatever in 2025. No, I added that last part. Ben, Amy Smith, Franzi, Harry the Gorillagician, Don Dottie, Kevin Burke, David McLaughlin, Old Bear Greg, Charlie Sheets says trans rights, No Shit Sherlock, and Por Favor Ven and Puerto Rico. Steve Bricegirdle says who the hell gave Penn a keyboard, and why didn't they do it sooner? Coach Rat Bastard, Wash Your Sister Sauce, Will Jason, David, I want to finger your cunt Brenner, Tristan Connett, Mason Gooch, Sagebrush, Matthew Mishu, Luke Mellon, Jason Andrew Davidson, Peter B. Clark, Matt Williams, Soapy Fresh, Brad Sherlag, Mike Cavanaugh, Rafiki, Steve Feldman, Jonathan P., NewRuleFX.com, Eric M. Ryan, Danny, insert meta joke here, Ruse, Little Mandar, MDM, I don't like that the Patreon has limited characters to 50. That's all one word. Adam Stickney, Nathan Julian, Jeremy in Shanghai, Chris Harris, Petty Officer Scoop, Daniel Leanne Rhymes. No, it doesn't.
I like that one every time.
William Wangerine, David K, Sean Brevik, Blue Drinks Film says, please tell the TCFE story again. And Brandon Knapp. Thank you so much.
Thank you.